All right, hello, and welcome to Stasis Pod, the Transformers Rescue Bots Academy podcast. I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
And I'm David.
And today we are getting in our covered wagons and heading west for All That Glitters.
Yay!
We're on the Oregon Trail?
We are on the Oregon Trail. We have died of cholera.
Oh no, I can't participate in this. My computer doesn't have a little mouth to stick the disc in anymore.
I did. Surprisingly, probably not surprisingly, but I did somewhat recently only get around to throwing away the 5-inch floppies with Oregon Trail on it. That I had picked up when I was at the used bookstore, which would have been in, like, 2005 to 2007.
I probably have a few left. I know I have somewhere Alone in the Dark on floppy.
Ooh.
Not sure. Presumably I have others somewhere. But that one is... Yeah, that one came in a different game. So it's somewhere in a box with a CD. Anyway...
All right, so yeah, this is the 37th episode of the first season of Rescue Bots. First aired October 19th, 2019. This is by Jody Reynolds and Brian Hofield. Brian Hofield, of course, is the Rescue Bots veteran, occasionally seen on the show as the guy who owns the Flobster.
Cool.
Last seen around these parts. Writing Life of the Party.
All right.
The one in which Medics is no fun.
Aww. Oh, that one had some really good chase bits.
And meanwhile, Jody Reynolds, last seen around these parts, writing Buddy Cop.
All right. That was fun.
One in which Hotshot is pals with Grimlock temporarily.
Briefly. Very briefly. And then backstabs him the moment he gets an opportunity.
That's right.
Oh, Hotshot.
So we open in the midst of the Searchathon, which Blades literally has the recruits looking for a needle in a haystack.
Also, happy Pride, Professor Blades is here.
Yes.
I swear, we have seen a needle in a haystack thing in Transformers before. Multiple times, probably.
Yes.
Was it a Rescue Bots?
I think it was a Rescue Bots.
Because I swear it wasn't that long ago, unless it was in R.I.D.
And then, of course, Whirl has a... she pulls out an actual electromagnet. And, you know, the rules didn't say that she could use that, but the rules don't say that she couldn't use it either.
Got some dogs playing basketball here.
So this is the fourth event of the Searchathon. Previous items being looked for include missing sock and Blades' keys, which I assume was not initially an event. He just lost his keys.
Yes.
And he decided to rope the kids into helping him find them.
That's right.
Fair. That's absolutely the kind of nonsense that he and also I would do as a professor.
A giant robot have keys to?
The office. He says the keys to his office.
Yeah. I assume it's more like a key card as opposed to, like, actual keys.
You'd think?
And it's also possible it was just, like, a giant key ring with, I don't know, I assume like a big Rubik's Cube on it or something.
Oh, I bet it would be.
It just strikes me as weird, like, Transformers even having keys at all, unless it's to a giant vault or some nonsense.
Like, they should just have...
Or Vector Sigma.
Yes, unless it's like a MacGuffin. They only can have a key if it's a MacGuffin.
Yeah, because, like, even, like, a card reader. It's like, just wave your hand on that. You are the card.
You could be like the people, and I say people, what I mean is men, who like have the NFC chip implanted in their hand so that they can unlock things.
Not just men. The first person I heard about, although maybe they were non-binary, was a woman.
Ah, okay.
Are they non-binary now? I haven't heard from them in a while.
I'm just thinking that it was like the key to Vector City, but it just opened his office door.
Yes, it was like gold and all block shaped, but it does just open his door.
I mean, honestly, all Transformers keys, if they do use them, should look like the key to Vector Sigma in different colors.
Yes.
Yes.
Strong agree.
Anyway, so that was the fourth event. The fifth one will be the hardest yet. So the person who wins that one is going to be able to select the location of their next Danger Room exercise.
This is exciting.
They're going to have to find Tough Luck Chuck somewhere in the entirety of Griffin Rock.
Which is a big enough place.
Hotshot wants to have a rescue at a racetrack, and Whirl wants to have a rescue at a zoo, and Medix wants to do one...
On Cybertron. What was the other one?
And then Wedge wants to do one based on Bumblebee's adventures.
Oh,
yes.
But again, we go back to Hoist reading lots of, I assume, young people's nonfiction, like the ones that have all those the really nice art in them. And he's been reading about the Wild West, so he wants to go with the Wild West.
It feels like, well, with his hat obsession and things, like he's been reading like 1950s boys' adventure magazines or something.
Oh yeah, so he needs a fedora, but not like in a weird way, like in a normal way, you know, the normal way
from the 1950s.
And maybe he's thinking that he's wherever he goes is going to end up like chest deep in water and have to fight off some sort of unlikely animal.
Yeah, like weasels, beavers, skunks,
giant crabs.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for those crabs,
possibly turtles.
Anyway, as Blades is going through the bridge, the ground bridge, and Chuck is following him. Chuck drops a piece of paper.
Yes.
Which, why did Chuck have a piece of paper to begin with?
He just had a wadded up piece of paper on him.
I mean, Chuck clearly has some sort of sapience, but probably not enough, like, data banks so that they could, like, plug it into him.
I guess?
Maybe. So they had to give him an actual physical map? I don't know. Give him
a paper map.
Mm-hmm. It's a weird MacGuffin of the episode.
Yes. So indeed, it is a map of where they're going to hide Chuck. So they go to the rock.
And is he going to tell anybody? Or no, he's going to keep it. He's not going to tell anyone that this has happened.
Well, he's debating whether or not to tell people. When there's a hotshot or something, he's like, let's go into the portal right now. It's like, okay, fine, I'll tell you later, maybe. I'm going to decide it.
He's going to think about it. It's time for learning an important lesson. This actually didn't end up being quite as much about learning an important lesson as I feared as we got to this extremely lesson of the week event.
Yeah, it's treated weird because it's an accident that it happens. But in a way, it also feels like it was an intentional plant of the map. And my brain, because of the title and where we're going, felt, this is just a treasure map. Although the treasure is Chuck. Anyway.
So they go to Griffin Rock, and surprise, surprise.
They have to spot Chuck from air.
Yes.
Which is like Blades carrying around what looks like an above-ground pool with all the rescue bot kids in it.
Yes.
Just get them in the pool. Airlift them.
So, unsurprisingly, he immediately finds Chuck.
Yeah.
And thus, he gets to be the first to choose their next Danger Room thing. So, indeed, they're going west.
Yay!
The wiki wiki wild wild west.
That's right. So, they So they get there and they meet Gold Pan Pete, who greets them with some authentic frontier gibberish.
This is, of course, a simulation of an authentic frontiersman. Also, their little mining town, their little Wild West town, did remind me a bit of the abandoned ghost town that they go to in R.I.D.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Well, because, like, all those little deserted ghost towns all kind of feel the same. Like, it's very Blazing Saddles. Well, I guess the town of Blazing Saddles is a little bigger, but not by a lot.
Yeah, well, and also, this is also supposed to be a gold rush kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the Wild West.
Fair.
Well, there are still saguaro cactuses and, like, little saloons and things.
Yeah, no, we're just not, you know, we're not dealing with, you know, outlaws or desperados or anything.
But it's a gold rush town, so you are going to be dealing with desperados.
Right, just not in this episode.
No, but the setting is basically that, because that's what the Wild West was. People going to some place, to look for gold or whatever. And then people showing up to take advantage of those people because those idiots got to buy shovels and food.
Yes. Bundles.
Anyway, Paste Pot Pete tells them a story.
Yes, about why they're hunting for gold. And his recommendation to find it is to use dynamite.
Use dynamite, boys! Yeah!
He's
and
a little,
Blades. Blades tells them that they are not going to be using dynamite on this simulation.
And he, this little simulation, Pete, teaches these robo-babies a new word that all of them fuck up. Eureka.
Eureka.
Which, like, I'm kind of surprised none of them get it right.
They
like,
try. They try their best.
They're way off.
I mean, they don't know ancient Greek.
No.
But
they're just baby children.
But they should have spent more time hanging out with Doc Green on Griven Rock.
Yes.
That's a guy who says Eureka like three times a day.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like a significant part of his vocabulary.
Oh, crap, I can't remember. Well, because that character's design reminded me of, I can't remember the actor or the character's name, from the show Eureka, where they had a black mad scientist. Well, there were a bunch of mad scientists.
Also, like, the town of weird science.
Yes.
So the actor is Joe Morton.
Oh, yes,
remember from
Terminator.
Get killed in Terminator.
Yay! Yes.
And then there's a giant explosion.
Yes.
Great death scene.
I can remember his face. I could not remember his name. And I forgot he was in Terminator.
Yeah. Joe Morton. Also on that show, Scandal. And also, like, everything.
Scandal. Yeah, he's down the road.
Gets killed really well.
Yeah.
So the person who prospects the most gold is going to get a week off their chores.
It's pretty good. It's not a bad deal.
So everybody's looking for gold, and Hoist is not doing so well because he's just panning for gold as opposed to finding, like, big chunks of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Medics manages to literally trip over a chunk of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It honestly, it had big Minecraft mines. Like,
yes.
You go into this opening in a cliffside, and there's just gold sparkling in the walls.
Yeah, he just turns around and stumbles into that, and then Wedge just starts digging a little bit and finds a lot of gold. And somehow Hotshot in hovercraft mode backs into the river and just brings up a lot of gold. Like, it's weird that Hoist isn't finding any by doing basic panning for gold, yes. Which is one of the weirdest ways to get gold. It's efficient, but you don't get much at all.
Truly, these children long for the mines.
Yes.
Also, why
first you mine, then you craft?
Why is Hotshot so obsessed with hovercrafts? Or with being a hovercraft? Like, it's not a useful vehicle. It's not even that fast.
No. I mean, it's useful to get across water kind of fast. But
it's like the least useful vehicle.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because he doesn't want to be useful. He wants to be unique and eye-catching.
Admittedly, he is the jet more often than not. But he does use the hovercraft.
Yeah, he does like being the jet.
More than you would think.
More than he should.
Yeah.
more than he should.
So, Pete, unsurprisingly, gets a little too dynamite happy and basically blows up a mountain on himself.
Yes, it becomes an emergency.
Yep.
They're like, Professor Blades, Professor Blades. And he points out that this is part of the simulation.
Yep.
Get to searching.
Which, like, okay. I think Blades is their best teacher.
He might be.
Because he's actually getting them to have fun while still learning things at the same time.
Well, he's the one who's more maybe the most on their level because he's also kind of a child.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, if you're getting chased to have them teach things, it's boring as shit and they get antsy real quick. Boulder, doing some art or something creative, it might work out. Heatwave is a little too tough because he's the headmaster, kind of.
Yeah.
So Blades is just the best at teaching these little kids.
He is. To find his keys.
Yes.
So Hoist finally admits to Whirl that, yes, I totally cheated. And she's shocked. I expected this at a hot shot, but not you.
Fair.
So they're searching, and indeed, Whirl does help Hoist find poor old Goldpan Pete here. And then as a reward, Goldpan Pete gives him the giant bucket of gold nuggets. So he is the winner.
Yay! But he's going to be honest.
Yep. And I like how Hotshot's all, well, I would expect this out of me, but not you.
Yes.
I mean, because this is only 11 minutes, you can't do as many, like, three times jokes. But that joke hits twice, and it's Hotshot saying it the second time. Good.
It's good stuff. It's good humor.
So anyway, they're counting up how much gold each one got. Who got was it Wedge who got the most?
I think it was Wedge who won, yes. And it makes sense. He's the guy who digs stuff.
Yeah.
Yes. Digging is kind of his thing.
And they go down the line, and then who came in last was, oh, it doesn't matter that I came in last because I have friends. Friendship wins the day, and they all hug.
And everybody hugs. It's always good when it ends with hugs.
Yeah.
All right, so that does it for all the glitters. And that now brings us to our second episode, Digfest.
Yay, Digfest!
Can you dig it?
Digging.
Diggy, diggy hole. Diggy,
diggy hole. So this first aired October 19th, 2019. It's the 38th episode of Rescue Bots. Written by Nathan Cockerill, previously seen around these parts, writing a balloon up a tree.
Oh man, that was a good episode.
Yes. And we open with a commercial for Digfest, the ultimate event for construction vehicle enthusiasts.
Okay, yeah. Now, this...
they don't specifically say it, but I suspect that this takes place on Sunday, Sunday, Sunday.
Your ticket price pays for the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
Yes.
Okay, so we have a guy who vaguely looks like Coop from Megas XLR wearing your regular trucker hat.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, mm-hmm. It's normal for a thing, and you show pictures of tractors and trucks and things. Okay, so it's truck show kind of thing. Why is the text in this commercial not in English?
Because.
Is that in Cybertronian or is that just gibberish?
That's a good question. It might just be gibberish.
But it's so weird. Like,
I want to say it's...
Oh yeah, apparently that is Cybertronian text.
Huh.
Okay, so does their TV translate it for the little kiddos?
Maybe.
Otherwise...
That is your no prize
yes.
Explanation.
I mean, that's a good no prize, but it feels like something that could have been mentioned because it's so weird to see, like, pastiching a normal, like, monster truck show commercial and the text spinning around not being in English. My brain was like, what is going on? Did I forget how to read?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm...
But if it's the TV translating into the Cybertronian, it's a neat idea. If it's not covered in this episode...
I feel like I'm used to that just being used, so when it, you know, so it can be used in other languages easier, but that's a good no-prize explanation that their TV just automatically translates text.
But of course, this commercial, it displeases medics because it's too loud.
Yes. Does not care for it. Too loud. Which, relatable, I suppose.
But hey, Hotshot, he's going to tell everybody about how famous he used to be.
And I'm like, oh, we forgot that you were so famous. Sometimes we forget that you're famous.
Yeah. Was he?
I guess
was
so.
Was he famous?
I mean, I guess amongst cube enthusiasts.
Yeah.
It never really felt like in the very first episode like he was supposed to be really famous. It felt like he was just locally famous, maybe in his little township on a team. It didn't feel like a professional team.
Cube does seem to be pretty popular on Cybertron, although, you know, maybe it's like...
He's a little kiddo. It wasn't like he was even on, like, the college team equivalent.
I mean, I don't know. You know, you have, like, gymnasts who are super young who get famous.
Oh, no, I don't want to think about Cube being a sport that you have to, like, destroy your body at a young age to do properly.
Or maybe it's just, he's just like Tony Hawk, where everybody's heard of him, but you would never actually recognize him.
Yeah. I thought that was just because he's old.
Yes, but like before Twitter fell, like it was nice to see tweets about Tony Hawk, occasionally from Tony Hawk, about meeting Tony Hawk.
Yes, about how people would like see his name on something, like on his credit card while checking him out and be like, oh, hey, like the skater? That's fun. Here you go, sir. Like, not picking up that Tony Hawk might actually be like a real human being who is standing in front of you, handing you a card with his name on it.
Well, because it also, Tony Hawk's so nondescript. He kind of just looks like your average hockey player.
Also, this is why I cannot watch any Sherlock Holmes-based show that takes place in the modern era. Because I cannot accept the possibility of some guy just being named Sherlock Holmes in the 2020s and that being fine.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's not the name of a famous guy, though.
I know, but I can't...
It doesn't feel like a modern name is kind of the point.
Well, no, but I mean, also, like, I cannot suspend my disbelief enough to believe that in this setting, everything else is exactly as it is, except there was never a famous fictional character named Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that also means that, like, detective fiction isn't as popular.
Well, either that or just to be like when you talk about your famous detective, it's you know, the guy from the Murders in the Rue Morgue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, another writer could have filled that niche.
But as far as the name thing goes, I may remind you that one of those famous modern Sherlock Holmeses was played by a modern guy with the name Benedict Cumberbatch.
I know. Yeah. No,
well, also, that's the worst
one. Really is the part where the setting is exactly like the actual modern day, except for that one detail. Because that just feels really weird, and I can't get my head around it. I can accept people being named Benedict Cumberbatch.
Now, how do you accept, like, a modern Dracula where the book Dracula doesn't exist?
Oh, that would be weird.
Yeah, because that's the same thing.
Yeah, because Dracula is just such a character.
Actually, I can't think of that many that do that. Most of the time, it's like, oh, yeah, either people know of Dracula vaguely, or it's like, oh, yeah, the book.
Yeah, like, to the point where there are people who will use Dracula as a general term, as a generic term for vampire.
Because technically it is.
Well, I guess it's like...
Dracula's.
I think in that movie Dracula 2000, like Dracula has a line about, that Bram Stoker, so inaccurate.
I guess the thing about that
that's usually the way to take it. It's like, oh, the book got the details half right.
No, I'll tell you what it is about that. Why I'm okay with things where Dracula is... a real person who exists in the modern day and was never a book, because Dracula is immortal.
I guess that's true.
Well, there's that.
So that just feels like an extension of the originally established universe.
So about the same thing.
Like, if you were telling a story where there was a character named, like, Sherlock Holmes the Fourth, who was an ancestor of the original Sherlock Holmes. Yeah, a descendant of the original Sherlock Holmes. That would be different because we've already established this world where Sherlock Holmes exists as a real person. That's the world of the original stories.
Okay, now I'm not going to do it, but I would bet money that at some point Lupin the Third encounters Sherlock Holmes the Third.
Probably.
Don't you mean Herlock Sholmes?
No, he had, Herlock Sholmes.
He doesn't counter Columbo Jr.
Wasn't there, like, the Herlock?
Lupin encounter Herlock? Probably.
I would assume that he would encounter, I don't know, Book Lumbo or something.
Or was it a different name? There was a Columbo-like character. I thought it was Columbo Jr. Or Balumbo Jr., maybe.
I mean, apparently Japan really loves Columbo.
Oh, yeah. Well, also because, I forget the guy's name. There was a detective fiction in Japan before Columbo that kind of really is a lot like Columbo. He's a scruffy guy in an old outfit, like an old kimono pants, who scratches his head a lot. He's effectively Columbo without the smoking and the dog. And he's in a bunch of famous books. I have some of them. I forget what his name is or the book.
Anyway.
Inugami Family. Inugami Family. Look that up. It's a good book. Good movie that's hard to find because it's not officially out in English, as far as I can tell. I bootlegged the goddamn thing.
The important thing is Hotshot is moderately famous.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow, we went on a big tangent. Oh boy.
You know these episodes are short.
Yes. So anyway, so Wedge is all, well, you know, I don't really want to be famous. Being famous sounds like it sucks. It would mean too much attention.
It sounds like a lot of work.
Meanwhile, an asteroid has crashed to Earth.
What? No, they're...
Not an asteroid, a satellite.
Not quite. There's a satellite that was a Cybertronian one that, like, Boulder had designed or worked on or something.
Yeah, yes. We are back to the extremely weird fact that Griffin Rock has a space program.
Yes.
Anyway, so it broke up in space into three pieces. Entering the atmosphere, it should break up into a lot more and burn up.
Well, it's very well made.
Yeah, because Boulder helped.
Yeah, it's Cybertronian tech. It comes crashing down somewhere in the middle of the United States in a deserty area. And the pieces are largely intact and leave no craters. Which annoyed me, but...
Yeah.
And it's sand. Maybe it just, you know, softened the blow.
The point is, they're searching for the three-section satellite.
It's
some cactuses.
It kind of makes me think of the, Skylab that ended up in, like, the Australian outback in the 70s.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then I believe there was a Russian satellite of some sort that crashed in the Canadian Arctic in the late 70s.
Oh.
They do point out that this is the desert near Milford, which presents me with more questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we were kind of assuming that... Well, originally in Rescue Bots, it kind of seemed like they were building it in Maine, anywhere, somewhere, on the mainland. Because they were saying mainland, but then there's goddamn palm trees.
Uh-huh.
Also, we were never told what town they were near then.
No.
But now we have Milford.
So we kind of assumed
this desert is near the academy.
Yeah.
But like on the map that they were showing, it looked like it was crashing in Texas.
Yeah.
Are they in Texas?
I have so many questions.
They're near the water. We know that. Presumably the ocean.
It's like Springfield.
Yeah, sure.
Whatever you needed to have, it has.
Yes, it's right there.
Which weirdly worked better than when they were stuck on an island off of Maine.
Yes. So they do indeed pretty quickly find two of the fragments.
By literally tripping over one of them.
Yes.
Yes.
But unfortunately, it seems that the third one has ended up in the middle of Digfest.
Oh, yeah! It's time! It's time for Digfest!
It's because, I forget, is it Hotshot or somebody is like, well, we found these two pieces. Oh, look, Digfest is over there.
What or as Maddox calls it, that dreadful noisy thing that was on the television.
Yeah, we have to look over there in case it landed over there, and any humans discover it, because there's so many of them over there. We have to go to Digfest.
Yes.
Could we not?
For our own, for everyone's good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good, stupid little argument.
Yes.
And it turns out, yes, that's where the other piece is.
So Wedge doesn't want to stay there, but...
When they're entering it, because it's sort of in a deserty area, it's sort of like this is a cross between like a monster truck rally and Burning Man.
Yeah, it's sort of got that vibe.
It's weird.
There's people who have there are people taking pictures of Wedge.
Yes,
because he's a cute little construction vehicle. Mm-hmm. It's just a general. Yeah.
Skip loader, as they say in this episode.
It's just a general, it's a construction vehicle appreciation event for construction vehicle appreciators.
Yeah, which, like, oh god, imagine Digfest in Robots in Disguise. There would have been three Constructicons hiding out at this place.
Yes.
I mean, that would have been a crazy episode.
Yes.
The episode we get is cute, but
yes, and so indeed, Wedge ends up in the event, having to stop one of these machines that's got it in control.
Yeah.
And even gets interviewed.
They were dancing.
Yes.
They were scoop diggers, like Scavenger in G1. But yeah, they were dancing, and one goes out of control. Why were they dancing? Because it's Digfest!
And then, like, monster trucks and things, they do fun things. Yeah, so Wedge ends up in the big round arena thing. And then while everybody else is waiting, looking at him from the sidelines in what feels like a gladiator warm-up room.
Yes.
Looking out through slots like they're in the Colosseum. Like, they notice, oh, hey, look, in the middle of this flat field, there's a piece that isn't flat because that's the chunk of the satellite.
I was actually expecting the satellite to have taken over the out-of-control digger, but that is not what happened.
Something like that? Yeah. Oh, they could have gone Killdozer with this episode. Dang.
I mean, it is in the same continuity. They could have brought in, Crusher Kate from those couple of Demolition Derby episodes.
Oh, yeah.
That would have been great.
By this point, she's already learned Spanish, and she's moved on to learning, like, Esperanto.
Anyway, so the announcer who was in the commercial is impressed with Wedge and tries to get an interview with Wedge and asks the driver to come out, and Wedge is just backing himself into lack of corner because it's a big round arena.
He's like, oh no.
And of course, since his name is Wedge, his parents were big fans of Rogue Squadron.
Yeah, there you go. You know there
I'm
is
just
some...
assuming he has a...
I don't know, man. Our generation names their kids stupid things.
Well, his parents were a fan of Final Fantasy games, and he has a brother named Biggs, but I was going to go for a gag that he has a sibling named Inclined
Plane. But those are just named
Plane.
After the Star Wars. David?
What?
David, the Final Fantasy characters are just named after the Star Wars characters.
I know, but the fact that the Wedge and Biggs, well, different Wedge and Biggs, have been in more Final Fantasies than Wedge has been in goddamn movies.
I mean, I guess.
Like, at this point, like, it may be more likely that someone knows Wedge from Final Fantasy games. Since Wedge is only in... Okay, actually, I guess he is... Technically in three of the original movies.
He's in three of the original movies, and he's in The Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, yeah.
And
everybody is in Rise of Skywalker.
I grumble skeptically, but also there are so many Aeriths out there. It's ridiculous.
And also, they made a bunch of novels with him in them.
Yes.
And,
Rogue Squad, okay. If you're an old fan of the EU, but you're only an old fan of the EU if you're old enough to have seen the movies in theaters.
And also, I was an old EU fan, and I saw the movies in theaters via the special editions.
That counts.
Yeah.
And also, he was recently on an episode of Star Wars Visions, the one that those little, sort of like an animation anthology.
Oh, yeah, I haven't
He was in the one that Aardman did.
Oh, I need to watch those.
Yeah.
And they got Dennis Lawson back to do it.
Oh, nice. One of the three Wedges. Because technically, in the first movie, there's three guys who make up one Wedge.
Oh, that's true, right, because there's some random dude, and then I think his voice is dubbed?
Yeah, there's a random guy in the meeting, then there's the guy flying the X-Wing, and then there's a guy dubbing the guy in the X-Wing.
But then I think he's just using his normal voice in Empire and Jedi.
Yeah, it's just the guy who was in the cockpit.
Yeah.
But it's weird that there's that many. There's three guys as Wedge in the first fucking movie. It's weird.
But yeah, my parents just love doorstops.
Well, yeah, as I said, inclined plane. Well, admittedly, like Wedge. Wedge is a good Transformer name. Pulley, kind of lever. Levers.
I'm a fulcrum.
Fine. Ooh, fulcrum. Wait, no, we have fulcrum.
Wait, is there? Is there a James Roberts character named Fulcrum? That seems like a James Roberts name.
Yes, yeah, pretty sure.
Isn't that the name of the bomb guy?
Oh, yeah, the bomb guy.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah.
From the Scavengers.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right, so.
So there you go.
So, yeah, the last piece of the satellite is in the arena. And so Wedge is, they're trying to signal Wedge to get this thing. But instead, Wedge ends up in the freestyle event, which is like a sort of a crazy demolition derby kind of race.
Yeah,
he is so excited to do the freestyle event.
It's a weird race, just do tricks and stunts off of jumps and across water. And Wedge does a barrel roll, which isn't a barrel roll, because a barrel roll is sideways, not vertical. But anyway, he does a front roll.
Yes, and that a bunch of these guys just totally wipe out, and I assume live.
Yeah, we don't.
You assume?
They're trucks with roll bars. They're fine.
It's Rescue Bots Academy. They're fine.
Yeah, some of this looks so dangerous that I kind of thought we'd see like a little parachute coming out of the trunk, like a downed Cobra jet.
That would be amazing.
So he ends up crashing himself when he does like a crazy ass stunt flip.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he ends up back in this gladiator prep room and telling him what a moron he is, even though that was extremely sick.
It was.
But he was like, oh, no, I was fine. It was just a fake out so that I could grab this chunk of satellite. Ta-da.
Ta-da! Hey! He's got the piece of satellite.
So everybody's
which is way smaller than I thought it was. Like, it's very handheld. Like, the wing parts were big.
Yes.
And then the central part is just this little pocketable thing.
Mm. So he's resist the call of fame, but I can always win Digfest next year.
Yeah, there's always next year to win Digfest.
Oh, what is the line where Hotshot's like, I should be offended by that?
Oh, yeah. Hey, look at Wedge go. Who does he think he is? Hotshot? Should I be offended by that?
Yes, but no.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was an amusing couple of episodes.
Yes, because it's cute that both episodes have a moment of Hotshot being self-aware.
Yeah. Even though they are not Hotshot episodes.
No.
Also, Wedge is like, some people don't care about fame, Hotshot. He does not. Wedge does not care about fame.
I wonder why he doesn't care about fame. Well, not that anybody else cares about fame other than Hotshot, really.
Maybe action is, much like Spider-Man, action is his reward.
Yeah. Action is his reward. Look out. Here comes the Spider-Man.
You know, wealth and fame, he's ignored. So, yeah, that does it for us for this week. We'll be back next week with a more Rescue Bots action, or possibly more of our new / old sideshow, in which my co-hosts are subjecting me to more anime-based torture.
Yes. You know, I've been most of the stuff that I watch that has deep lore is stuff that I am enmeshed in the deep lore of. But I have recently been watching, for the past few years, I've started watching Doctor Who. Oh. And there's a lot of, like, I don't know, I think I've heard of this character somewhere. Like, who is this? Oh, hey, it's those things. Oh, hey, it's that guy all of my male-attracted English major friends won't shut up about.
Yes, Matt Smith.
It's like, no, David Tennant. David Tennant.
Oh, but, I mix those two up.
It's so... The feeling that I have watching Doctor Who is what we are subjecting Rob to in watching Gundam.
And see, the thing is, they've added, like, all of the old Doctor Who they have to Tubi, and I've been watching Tubi. So I would know that deep lore more than this.
There's also occasionally where there'll be, like, the Eurovision riff episode where there's, like, actual cameos and guest stars of people playing themselves, and I'm American, and I don't know. I don't like pop music, so it's like, I don't know what any of this is. This is great.
You don't like modern pop music.
Oh, yeah, that's British deep lore.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, but it's fun, though, being like, I feel like this is, you know, I haven't stopped watching because I felt like I was out of my depth and things didn't make sense. It was, you know, it's kind of fun. It's okay, because the Doctor met Death's Head one time.
Yes, oh, and Death's Head needs to come back. They brought back so many things recently. Death's Head do needs to come back, but there will be a licensing weirdness because it has... Anyway, yeah, the Eurovision episode was crazy because I knew there was supposed to be a famous guest star in that episode. Mm-hmm. And by process of elimination, I figured out who it was. Uh-huh. But, like, that guy just felt so artificial and plastic, I was waiting for him to be turning out, oh, he's a secret monster alien.
Oh, man, he's one of the Autons.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, yeah, it's, that's, I can sympathize with you, Rob, because that is the kind of thing I subject myself to when I watch Doctor Who.
But our hope is that you will grow to like Gundam, as will our audience.
Well, someday. We'll find out, given that the previous Gundam that I've watched was G Savior and that Hathaway thing. Gundam.
Yes.
Hey, Gundam and Hathaway.
Good news, they're all in the same continuity.
Wait, they are? I thought they...
Kind of.
Oh, wait. Okay.
Well, Hathaway and G Savior are in the same continuity. The G-Quarks that we're about to watch is an AU of that continuity.
It's a what-if, basically. Yeah. It's okay. A what-if. So it is... There's a lot of, hey, I wonder how that character is doing in this version of the story. I wonder if they died. Because so many characters died. So many characters died.
It was a war.
Yeah, but so many characters died. I mean... When this original Gundam series starts, half of the human population has been killed.
Uh-huh.
And then, you know, it just continues with characters who are actually in the show also dying. So much death.
Okay.
Well, to be fair, like, once that show starts, the death count actually goes down. Because half of humanity in all of... the Earth sphere is dead.
In the war in general, yes. But as for named characters are encountered in the narrative, the death count is still pretty high. R.I.P. Miss Matilda.
Yes.
Right. So yes, that is a fun little side project we are going to be doing.
All right. So until next time, when either I am subjected to more Gundam or... Anyway, so we are all over the internet. Until then, we are on Facebook, we are on Mastodon, we are on Blue Sky, and we have a Patreon.
Yes, we are hosted on iaconunderground.net. where we have a Patreon set up to help with hosting and other expenses at patreon.com/IaconUnderground. Every month we do a special episode where we're talking about something fun that is not part of our main podcast stream. For this month, for June, I don't know if we could call Brave New World a Pride month special, but I'm sure I could find some subtext in there if I dig hard enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's no Civil War. Civil War would absolutely be a Pride Month special.
There's a character who is gay in the comics who unfortunately does not make it to the credits.
Yeah. R.I.P. But yes, we are going to be watching Captain America. We are going to be watching Captain America Brave New World for a Patreon special this month. You can join for as little as $1 a month. You get access to our full back catalog of specials. We are getting close to 100 episodes, and those are a lot of fun.
All right, so until next time, we track down some monster savings. And hope that you won't tune out. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm Jen.
And I'm David. Okay. Record.
All right, everything looks good on my side.
One question before we start: what are we called? We're doing Rescue Bots first, right? Okay.
Yes, Rescue Bots.
Okay.
Oh yeah, we need a title for the other podcast. Shit.
Well, we've got this one to think up. All right.
All my titles are either really good or really bad. So.
I think we want really bad.
And I figured we would just do it as a continuation of Superhuman Samurai Cyberpod and just have that be the sub feed that we use whenever we do otaku nonsense.
That's definitely is Kimono Friends under that?
No, I guess it wasn't.
But it should be. Cause that was kind of the prequel.
Yeah, I could always go into those episodes, but I mean a lot of those were Patreon.
Well yeah, but like four of them, I think, were not Patreon. The rest were Patreon. But I thought eventually we did toss all of them out as regular episodes.
I can always
filler. We should do that.
I can always go in and checkmark that, because all I have to do is go into the post for it and checkmark that feed, and it adds it to that other feed. So I can always do that. Just
slap those guys together into their own chunk on the website as a list, and just make them their own feed. There you go. There are anime sub thingy. I guess calling it the Cyberpod does work.
Okay.
Because we have cyber new types.
We do, a few episodes in.
Yeah.
Eventually.
It'll take us a couple months to get there.
I was kind of wondering if we might want to do just two episodes at a time. Just so it doesn't take forever, but we could also just take forever. That's fine.
Well, no, my idea was like two in the first month.
Okay, that's fair.
Like, we record this one, and then we have another one, like, quick after, and then the rest of it's, like, 1 month at a time. We can do that. Well, because we started the first Gridman the last month the anime was airing.
Yeah. We're great at jumping on those.
It's fine.
It is fine. These things can live out there forever. Kitty looking at me.
Okay. All right, hello.